It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine, and I'm delighted to be joined today by JJ Bull the Bullard.
Hello.
Hi there.
I was going to do something funny there and I didn't do it.
No, okay. Well, you did something quite funny.
Yeah.
You said hello in a funny voice with a face, with a funny face. Also joined by Jonathan Dog McKenzie.
Hello.
Yes, exactly. See, it was funny enough for John to parody it, so that's nice, isn't it? Now, before I introduce our special guest today, can we just point out that you're both wearing matching jumpers?
Yes.
And would you be able to describe the jumper for the listener, JJ?
The jumper is a Christmas version of the France, I believe it's the 1998 top that they wore on winning the tournament themselves in their own country.
In their own country, yeah.
In the World Cup.
Yeah.
Soundtracked by Dario G. Zidane is on the back. Yeah. It's very Christmasy. It's nice.
Yeah.
We were sent these by Classic Football Shirts,
right,
which is a fun place to go.
And our special guest joining us today, delighted that he's here, Mr. Michael Bailey. What are you wearing, Michael?
I'm wearing the Mexico version. I'm guessing from a similar year. Oh. I don't really know. I didn't check.
I think that's 94, isn't it?
Is it 94?
It's got maybe 90, I don't know.
Aztec Lovely. Father Christmas sewn into it, and it's
Aztec
made by
Santa.
Elf Sport.
Right, Elf Sport, yeah. Well, they're all thoroughly hideous.
Reminds me of my Noel Edmonds.
Would that it were, hey? Would that it were. But listen, today there's plenty going on to discuss. Of course, we've just finished watching Brazil beating South Korea. The earlier game today was Japan and Croatia. That was the first penalties of the tournament, maybe the last. Who knows? We can't possibly know the future. And a couple of other little bits too. We might talk about Ronaldo a bit later. There seems to be a story developing there. And of course, as usual, points are bad. But have you had a good day, Michael Bailey?
I've had a lovely day. More World Cup football. So that's good.
Yeah.
And lots of goals. And I had a lovely dinner. So
what did you eat for dinner?
It was a sort of a vegetarian vegan burger thing.
Oh.
Very nice. What did you have for dinner, Joe?
I had a beige pasty with some beige chips. Yeah.
Beige feast.
But if you like your enjoyables with the colour, then you should visit theathletic.com. Visit theathletic.com/TIFO. Theathletic.com/TIFO, where the journalism is anything but beige. Okay, fine. Now, I will leave you in the warm hands and the cool embrace of Mr. Michael Bailey.
Maybe he's born with it. Maybe it's a chip supper.
Maybe it's a chip supper. Okay, Brazil 4-1 South Korea. Now, this was quite an exciting game with lots and lots of goals. It felt like there at one point like there might be more, JJ. But let me come to you first. Are they really good? This is Brazil now. Are they really good because the players are good, or is the manager doing something interesting?
Yes.
Right.
So the players are individually very, very good, but they're playing in a system which gets the most out of all of them. The one weakness when you look at their squad is probably at fullback, where they maybe don't have the best ones. They're playing Danilo. In this game they won, they played Danilo at left back and played Eder Militao, who can play at right back, but he's actually more of a third centre back. So that thing that lots of teams do now, where the left back will go forward to be like a wide player and then the centre backs all hook over, so a four becomes a back three with Casemiro anchoring it, is something they do. And it makes perfect sense. And then they basically got a front five with some of the most exciting, entertaining players you've ever seen on the pitch at the same time. That's a bit of hyperbole, actually. I probably don't mean that.
Sure.
It's because they were good today. That's why I'm saying that.
Yeah.
But they are all individually really good. Rafinha, who is obviously rubbish at Leeds, is excellent for Brazil when he plays. So that really helps. But they've got players that suit. Like Vinicius Jr. has really come on in the last couple of years to be one of the probably best young talents, if not just the best talents in world football.
Absolutely.
Very, very good to play. And Neymar's back, so that helps. He's very important to them, obviously.
Neymar's back, of course. Big problem at the last World Cup. Not so much of a problem. Oh, no, two World Cups ago. Neymar's back. But Neymar is now back.
In
the other sense.
His ankle was of a size enough to play football this evening.
His ankle was back to normal.
Yes. And then they had to they don't have to get a power saw to take off his casts after he plays. He's been playing like something like a cast tonight.
Right.
And he still scored.
Wow.
Yeah. So well, good luck to everyone else.
That's Neymar, isn't it? Now, John, you love to talk about this, and I enjoy to listen to you discuss this. We've mentioned this a couple of times before on TIFO podcasts, and I think we're probably going to do another promo now for your TIFO Talks podcast episode with Jamie Hamilton. But you have written here that Brazil perhaps showed a bit of a European tactical approach in this game. Would you just reapprise listeners of what that means and then talk about it as it relates to this game?
Yeah, so Brazil in this game actually quite structurally similar to what we've seen Arsenal doing a lot this season. We've obviously talked about Arsenal a lot this season because they're doing quite well. But Chiche, the Brazil manager, spent some time in Europe in between Brazil games, learning a little bit about the European game. And you can see that very much in what he's doing on the pitch. So let's talk about positional football. We all know about positional play. So this idea that you have these channels that you operate in, and the idea being that you are going to attack these channels between the opposition back four. So there's space in between all of them. You will try and get a wide player on either side. Your number nine usually in the middle in between the centre backs, and then you've got these two channels in the half spaces, as we call them, where you can try and attack the space as well.
Between the full backs and the centre backs.
That's right, yeah.
And the five channels are like wide space, half space, central space, then another white half space, then another wide space.
Yeah. Absolutely. So that's a very common thing for you to see European coaches doing anyway. But what we've been seeing a lot actually in this tournament, on top of that, is we talk a lot about rest defense with respect to Arsenal this season, and we've seen this happening as well. So yeah, JJ is correct in saying that Brazil have adopted a sort of back three. They pushed up the left back in pretty much every game so far. So they've got the back three here. They've got Casemiro sitting here. And yes, Danilo is getting forward in certain possession phases, but actually when the ball goes into the final third, he is inverting here, sitting alongside Casemiro. And then they've got this unit here that is going to, in the center of the field, behind this, the front five that we're talking about. And they are going to, they're going to make sure that if the ball is turned over by any of these members of the front five, they've got a structure in place that they can use to actually break up the play quite comfortably. So we call this a rest defense because these are the attacking players, this is the rest of the players, and they've gone quite narrow and central in order to break things down. But really interesting idea behind going to a back three, because South Korea were pressing in a 4-4-2. If you're playing with a back four, obviously the two forwards here can press on the two centre backs like this, and then you've got the wide players in that four looking at the full backs. But obviously if Danilo pushes forward and the back four becomes a back three, you then have three players up against a front two, and then you're starting to ask questions about, and we talked about this like a lot actually yesterday when we were talking about England, how do you start breaking up the opposition structure? So if Danilo is pulling in here, the wide player is out of position. Mm-hmm. Neymar can drop into the space that's left behind. We're seeing Vinicius coming a bit more narrow as well. So what you're thinking about in those situations is, how do we break down the opposition structure? And these are all sort of very European ideas.
Just before we move, this is quite important actually, because there's a couple of people in the chat who've posed good questions, which you can answer, and I'd like to give you the opportunity to do that so that we avoid any misunderstanding. Marcus Vinicius says, these guys think Europe is another world in terms of tactics. And John Quadrino says, did John realise how offensive he is, saying Chiche learned something of the European game? I just want to give you the opportunity to explain what you actually mean by that, so that we don't confuse people who now think that you're a horrible, horrible racist.
So in terms of the Europeanization, what we're usually meaning by that is this concept of playing expansive football, so having a structure and being able to exploit opposition defenses through using space. And there's a big debate in the coaching world right now between a sort of positional system, so something like this, where you've got all of these channels and you're putting players in each one of these channels and you're trying to get as much coverage of the pitch as possible, and then more relational structures. So the idea then being happy to have players in the same channels and trying to overload almost in certain areas. And there is a Brazilian coach at the moment called Fernando Diniz, who uses a similar approach to this. So rather than getting as much coverage of the pitch, actually you're going to see all the players sort of coming a little bit more central and then playing quick 1-2 passes and stuff. And obviously in Brazil, they play a lot of futsal. That's a style of play which I think we see Brazilian players being very technically adept. Yeah. And so the idea is that you then bring all of your players close together, and then you work your way through blocks by having much more compact coverage in those sorts of senses. So,
it's quite interesting on a broader level, though. I remember listening to that Jamie Hamilton podcast and hearing you both talk about even just the different approaches to thinking about football, and about how in the European sense, the idea seems to be more to try to impose a structure upon it, whereas that's not necessarily the right way to do it. And I think there are clear examples of teams elsewhere in the world that play in a slightly different way, where the emphasis comes from somewhere else, and they can create, in some cases and in many cases, better football teams for it, as we saw tonight with Brazil. So I just want to make the point that by you describing this team as playing fairly, you know, European style in terms of their tactics, it's not a suggestion that that is better or worse. It's just, I think there is a distinction in terms of how
and all,
play evolves.
All tactics are European, right? All, in the sense that football started out in Europe and spread. And obviously a lot of South American football is influenced by that spread of particularly, I mean, anything Jonathan Wilson has written about this, a lot of Hungarian coaches went across to South America. Obviously there's Italian influence in Argentinian football, et cetera, et cetera. So calling it, I think, European, we're sort of focusing more on the fact that it's all about structure and coverage rather than some of the other ways of playing. But it is worth saying that I have heard some Brazilians talk about gaucho football, which I think is this idea that you are a little bit more conservative defensively. And I think there's people who would say that Chiche is doing that kind of approach as well. So it's obviously not just a straight up European style of football that he's playing. But I do think that when you look at the way that Brazil are playing in this tournament in particular, it's just very, very elite European teams who are playing the same kind of football that we're seeing here. And from what we're seeing today, it's clearly working.
Mm. And I was going to add on top of that, so the thing John's talking about with the back four becoming a back three, because it cancels out the front two. I mean, originally the reason teams swapped to using a back three was to deal with teams always playing a two-striker system. So what I think is interesting now about modern tactics is that what you often get is not, like, so in the past it was everyone was a 4-4-2, and then, you know, after being a pyramid style shape, it's all through history, whatever. So they've been, lots of teams 4-4-2, then suddenly they were maybe 3-5-2 or 3-4-3, whatever it was. And now what you get is lots of teams who have shapes that change automatically depending on where the ball is, where other players is, and they've got all these different systems in one. So the back four becomes a back three in one phase of the play, which was something that happened maybe in the 30s or like the 50s or something like that. The other thing you've got is that, like, this Brazil team plays very much like the old Brazil teams you might think of, like they used to play a 4-2-4. It was quite a Brazilian way of playing. But they've got the old 4-2-4 with lots of attacking players getting forward really quickly, but combining that now with modern shift to a 3-2-2-3 shape, which is also quite old. So that shape is now quite modern and used in lots of teams, but it was also something that used to be the case that lots of teams used in the past. But that's an example, I think, of, like, lots of teams in Europe have this because Europe's a big, massive place where lots of people have moved around and lots of ideas have been swapped. And so in the past, you could maybe have said that England was a little bit stuck in that 4-4-2 shape and never really adapted because it is an island and it hasn't really had as many influences itself to then evolve and get better. But now it does.
Yeah. It is quite funny when you, like, I think you mentioned already Jonathan Wilson's book, Inverting the Pyramid. It's quite funny to read about sudden changes, 60 years ago. The Hungarian team that came to play England in 1963 or 1953, it was one of those two. Where they had Nendo Hidaguti, who played in the false nine role, and just obliterated England 6-3 or something, and no one had ever seen anything like it. And because they literally hadn't seen it before, because you can't just watch Hungarian TV, Hungarian football on TV in 1953. You have to wait to play teams. There's all these stories about Liverpool learning from Red Star Belgrade. You know, there's like the exchange of ideas in the early days is really interesting, and it does mean that. That different places do develop different styles of football. Again, like, the emphasis isn't on which one is better or which one is worse. Yeah. The emphasis is on what's the difference between these types of football? What are the traditions? Where do they come from? How do people think about football differently? And what can everybody learn from each other about those different types of football? That's the thing that's really interesting.
A lot of people
in the
chat saying I'm being quite colonial, saying that the football tactics were European, but football spread because of colonialism. That's not to say anything positive or negative about things. It's just
demonetized and cancelled.
No, finish your point.
Football spread because of colonialization, and that's that's not, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I largely think colonialism is bad, but I do think that the spread of tactics happened in that way because of the way things were in the world. I'm also not saying that Chiche is better because he's playing European tactics. And there's a lot of people in Brazil, I believe, who would argue that European influence there is bad for Brazilian football, because it is about structure. It is about taking away that creativity and freedom that you get in a more, I suppose, like relational systems.
So. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm cancelled. See you all later.
It's a good conversation. It took day 16 before we found where the line was, but we found it now, even though it seems like the most mild of many conversations.
We found the line. It's not gone over it.
I don't think we have at all.
No. I think it's a really good
I would
point.
Highly encourage people who in the chat who have either misunderstood or we haven't explained it very well to go and listen to that Jamie Hamilton podcast. It's really, really interesting. And almost the entire conversation comes from the perspective of how can European coaches learn from coaches elsewhere and different types of football. Like, I'm just watching John's eyes reading the live chat. Someone close his computer before he explodes. Yeah. Thank you, Michael Bailey. But pop your hand over that live chat.
Yes.
Okay, why are they booing me? I'm correct. This is the beginning of a downfall, isn't it? This is how it happens.
I've not seen
someone
John turn.
Becomes
yet.
Indignant. Yeah. Let's just all sit here and watch him for a few moments longer.
You've seen him turn or heard him turn in Rocket League, I think, haven't you?
When we play video games together, yeah. You got a little grumpy streak when you play video. You're not displaying it now.
I do topple over the edge sometimes.
Yeah.
I also would like to clarify that I think colonialism was wrong.
You don't need to. It's fine.
No, but the people in the chat are implying that I don't think this.
What's happening now is one of the both wonderful and horrible things about the modern world. What's happened is that the chat, the live chat here, and for people listening to this, we're streaming this live on YouTube, hence the tension in the room. In case we do say something wrong, we can't take it back. but that's where the tension comes from. But there's a live chat here of about a couple of thousand people. Not everyone's typing in there, but they're like, imagine them like sharks, yeah? They're in the water and there's a little drop of John McKenzie blood has dropped in off the side of the boat and you're hanging your little foot off the side there and they're coming for it, you know? And then every time you explode, you give them a little bit more blood. That's right, Michael. And then the sharks, they circle, they come a bit closer and then they go, you love colonization! And you don't. It's fine. Don't worry. We all know.
Well, this is the last time I bring something interesting up on this podcast.
Yeah, no, this is the downside, isn't it? Now what's going to happen is John's only going to talk about things that aren't interesting for fear that something bad might happen to you.
I always thought it'd be me to get cancelled first.
So did I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not because I'm evil, but just because I'd say something stupid.
Yeah.
That's why I haven't opened my mouth yet.
It's a marvel Alex Stewart made it through.
Terrified.
Actually, he doesn't really say anything cancelable. Fine. Right. Let's move on to something more appropriate and less horrible than the stuff that John was just saying. Oh,
God, it's so horrible.
Disgusting. Okay, fine. Chiche subs. Let's talk about Chiche subs, JJ Bull. I can't ask you a question. Do you want to talk about the subs?
Yeah, I can't really remember them.
I'll throw you a softball
Excellent.
Later.
Excellent, thanks.
What about those subs? Should he have rested better players, JJ?
I
want to see them play, so I'm glad he didn't.
Yeah, well, there's two things, right? So you can take your players off and give them rest, which is obviously important because you have lots of games to play. A quarter final coming up soon.
Which he did in the third group game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what you lose by doing that is momentum. And it's very important to keep that team together and understand that it's not just a free game where everyone just gets a goal. Although we did put the goalkeeper on for Alisson to give him a shot. So maybe I'm not wrong there.
Yeah.
But I think keeping the core unit together so they play and keep that familiarity going is really important. And there is something that you can't measure about it, I think. I think it's a good idea. And
it's not about colonization, is it?
No.
Oh,
the only
God.
My only thank comparison God. I can do would be like Leicester always playing the same starting 11 when they won the league. Something about that, even though they might be tired, makes that work a bit better, I think.
Yeah, okay. Great stuff. And are Brazil going to win the World Cup now, Michael?
Cool, that is a very thanks for the softball.
Real softball for you.
I have to say from the first round of games, I thought there was a real solidity to Brazil because you already know what they can do going forward. So the question tends to be, are they going to be organized enough to make sure that they're keeping the other end protected? And I think they've looked like that in terms of the patience they've shown in their games. They haven't been in a hurry, and then they've just eventually just sort of won the game by the other team sort of bowing in submission to them, which is quite interesting then today because it was such a fast start. They had so much space and there was so much dynamism about them as well. Mm. So, yes. I mean, France, they are going to win.
Well,
they potentially could win the World Cup. I think they've got a real chance, but probably listen, top eight.
They're on the Argentina side, as you can see from my screen here.
Well, this is nice. We've got
Brazil here coming through. They will play Croatia won in the other game. Of course they did. We'll play Croatia in the next round, which is a tough game.
They'll beat Croatia.
We would expect, you would have thought that the Argentina's would beat the Netherlands. We don't know, but like, we could be setting up an all South American final. Very exciting. Based on what you've seen of Argentina and Brazil before, and apologies to people from Netherlands and Croatia listening, I'm making a
We've scrubbed off the European teams. Is that what you're saying?
I think it's what everyone outside of Netherlands and Croatia wants is to see a Brazil-Argentina semi-final. But were we to see it, based on what you have seen already of both teams?
So it's a Copa America final rerun in the semi-final, which will be fun. Yeah. And I think Neymar talked about that at the time with Messi, didn't he? Did I read that right? I don't know. He sort of said, see you in Qatar, I guess. I fancied Argentina quite strongly before the tournament, having not really watched them much. I just assumed, oh, they've been unbeaten a long time. They're good.
That was like me too.
Yeah.
That's fine. I watched them loads and I still thought they were really good. Yeah.
Okay.
I also watched them a lot.
You don't even need to watch them to think the right thing.
Well, I've made a career out of that. But essentially, then they started playing and looked all over the place, really, against very passive against Saudi Arabia. But I think they have found their way into the tournament now. I think they're keeping the ball much better. They look like they've sort of got over their initial wobbles. It'll be a brilliant semi-final. And I think they are probably, I could narrow it down to Brazil, Argentina and France, I think, in terms of who wins the thing. Because that's the sort of question you asked me at the start.
Well, that answers the other question I have for Michael Bailey. Has England got a chance against France? Apparently not.
Oh, no, but this is a long one.
Do they not support England in Norwich?
Yes, very much, 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 much so. I was speaking to all my Norwich podcast fellows. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't believe that I was questioning the fact that England wouldn't win the World Cup. Oh. They were adamant England would win. I love Gareth Southgate for so much of what he does and what he stands for and who he is. Lovely man. But I just feel that, and this isn't controversial, when it gets to big games against really quality sides who are tactically well managed and coached, he's just that little bit short, which may be wrong and it may be a myth, but that's just my feeling. So
do you know what he is? He's like the moment. He's like the one show of football managers, isn't he?
I love the one show. What are you trying to say?
Nothing at all. Should we move swiftly on? Michael Bailey loves the one show.
The England fans a question. Mm. When you watch a team like Brazil playing like they are tonight, does that make you think that you've maybe overrated England?
What, do you want me to speak from behalf of the English? Yeah.
On behalf of the English people.
The people I know in Norwich.
No, just on behalf of the English people. You're allowed to have opinions. I wonder whether or not, you know...
I wasn't sure that you were after the first 10 minutes
of the
podcast.
Don't cancel me, John. I'm not going down with you.
If I'm going down, you're coming with me.
I'll go down with you.
Do you mean to say that we personally...
Yeah, when you watch a game like that tonight, do you watch it and think back to the game last night and think, oh, actually, we were quite high on England after last night, but now watching Brazil, maybe less high?
I don't think England have gone beyond to a significant level what I would have expected them to, given the quality of opposition they've played. I think when they come up against France, that's a completely different level to anything they've taken on so far in this tournament. And it is a bit of a mix and mash because you look at that beating Senegal like that and you're okay, well, that's a great performance given they drew with the Dutch. Then obviously the Dutch comfortably beat the USA, who England drew with earlier in the tournament. So I think that's all on a level. I think England are at a similar level as the Netherlands, but I look at France, Brazil, and probably Argentina and just think they're a notch ahead. But then that's why the quarterfinal is so intriguing, because it's like, will England step up? Because they've been working towards this moment for two other tournaments.
I don't feel like I've overrated them, but then, all I ever do is predict that they'll win 5-0 before every game. But I don't consider Brazil and England to be in the same stratosphere in terms of technical footballing ability, not as individual players, but as a team. But I also feel like they play in a completely different way. And even if tactically they don't, and I wouldn't be the expert to be able to explain that, I feel like the whole approach to the game is just different. And also it's tournament football, right? And if we've learned one thing from covering tournament football extensively...
England always lose at the end.
Is that the result that you expect, or you would expect over a longer period of games, maybe in a domestic league calendar competition, you don't always get JJ Ball.
Are you asking me a question?
No, no. I just said your name at the end of a statement in the hopes that you would pick up and run with it.
You
weren't listening.
No.
Never mind. Let's move on. I want to ask a question now of you, JJ Bull, about the Korean Republic manager. I mean, is there anything possible that that team could have done to either get back into this or to stop it from happening? I mean, what kind of options do you have if you are the Korean Republic manager against a team like Brazil? You see the first goal goes in, and whilst heads on the pitch don't drop, you do have that sinking feeling like, oh, okay.
Definitely. Yeah. Because your whole plan would be to like try and get them to halftime or something. Just don't concede, basically, because you're going to have a chance in the break and you've got players like Heung-min Son who can do something in the counter-attack. That's what your kind of options are that you're relying on. Conceding early changes that. You'll have different plans in place. So the game plan will include if this happens, you know, if A happens, then B happens, if C happens, and D happens. So players know what to do, but you'll try not to confuse them too much with too much information. The managers will know. The players will know not to concede. They have. So suddenly you've got to change something. But Brazil, where sometimes it doesn't matter how well prepared you are defensively, sometimes the other team just comes at you like hungry tigers. And then they're coming towards them. Right? And they're going... And so when they do that, there's not much you can do. If you have
no, like your rawr was very sensual.
Yeah.
You look like a tiger trying to escape the laws of gravity.
Yes,
in many respects.
Through tigers in space. And so the one thing he did do, the manager, in the second half was he stopped the fullbacks from going forward for South Korea. So like the left back and right back were pushing up a lot and they were leaving loads of space in behind. And in Brazil, we're doing these cross-field passes where they were finding long diagonals to a player in the left who was Vinicius, or they'd find... I think Rafinha was on the right and they're always in space because the fullbacks were up. So we just stopped doing that, just kept them in. But that's a very much, it's a different approach. So if you have the fullbacks going forward, you're trying to create yourself passing options going forward so you can try and then create and actually have a go at creating to score a goal. Because maybe Brazil will let you through. You don't know. It's worth having a go at them. What they probably should have seen from other games is that was not going to happen because they're really solid. And also they counter-press really quickly in Brazil. So when they lose the ball, they win it straight back. And so going into this more solid block and trying to be more defensive, it probably worked in the second half because Brazil weren't being tigers going at them. But
what's wrong with this tiger? Seems a bit wonky.
It's got long legs.
Okay.
And so there was less momentum anyway from Brazil. So the tigers were more sleepy, but they were more awake in the first.
Right.
They had eaten all their food.
They had more clothes. They had halftime food, yeah.
Yes. Okay, fine. Well, would you like a fun fact, Michael Bailey?
Always.
Yes, okay. This was the last game in Stadium 974. Do you know where they're taking it next?
Is it Uruguay?
I don't know. I actually don't know where it's going. That kind of sounds right, doesn't it? Although...
They're just taking it down, aren't they?
I think they're taking it somewhere else.
I think I learned from one of the TIFO videos that they were going to try and... They said they would be building them in Africa or something like that.
Yeah, but I think Michael Bailey's right. I feel like there's something somewhere they're taking it.
It's like an expo or something. Are they taking it apart and putting it back together?
Something's happening.
I'm kind of hoping they were taking it down during the second half, from the top, bottom.
Yeah, like we were saying earlier, it was a bit like closing time at pubs. So no one's in the pub and there's 15 minutes left. You just start putting the chairs up.
You start taking the stadium down, yeah.
So basically that's what they were doing, yeah.
Okay, very interesting. Well, there we go. That was a fun fact, wasn't it? Now, let's have a break, recuperate, and when we come back, we will discuss all of the other one football game. Yes, recuperated, feeling strong and fresh, happy Michael Bailey?
Aces to like 10 out of 10.
He's always happy. And Japan 3-1 Croatia. Yes, that of course refers to the fact that there were penalties in this game, and I think we should maybe start with the penalties, John McKenzie, because they were not the best penalties.
No, they weren't very good at all. I think it all kicked off with Minamino missing the first penalty, and that just put a huge amount of pressure on Japan, and I think that probably played into the poor performance that they had. Although I did see John Harrison, who is a goalkeeper expert online, he has a model for penalties, and he worked out that the Livakovic, the Croatian keeper, actually didn't perform much better than the other goalkeeper in terms of what you would expect him to save. So it wasn't just that the Japanese penalties were bad. It was that he I think he saved two more
bit of both
penalties than bit you would expect him to. So.
There's a very psychological element of the game, isn't it, Michael Bailey? It brought back to me thoughts of England in the final of the Euros last summer.
Well, they just didn't look like they believed at any point when they stood up to take a penalty. Mm. They were so poorly executed. And I guess there's a degree of experience in this. Like Croatia, even though the penalty takers were different, you kind of felt like they'd done this before. They'd come from behind in knockout stages at the last World Cup. They'd gone through.
That's so relevant, isn't it? Yeah. It's like knowing you've been to a different stage before. I think the Croatia, so there's a little bit of calmness there, maybe.
I wonder, though, the Japanese, man, they must have taken penalties in Asian Cup
they
or something.
Did,
like
yeah.
They must have had like, experience there.
Your whole life's built towards playing in this World Cup, really.
Okay, right. So you mean from a personal mental perspective?
I think so, yeah. I think it's just different. It's like you see teams struggle to get through different rounds of the Champions League. So they're like Man City trying to go one step further each time, or PSG going to go one step further each time. There's something psychological to it, and I don't know what it is. It must run through the entire club. If it's a club, like even through to the ground staff or something, it must be some sort of vibe coming off you. I'm going to my string theory thing again.
Real Madrid as well are constantly getting through and winning Champions Leagues, even though they're maybe not playing the best football, because they have the ability, that socio-effective ability to be like, we've been in this position before where we're losing, and we know we've got the players to be able to come back. This sort of self-belief, which is really important in football.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, Japan displayed that in the 90 minutes against Germany and against Spain, coming back from a goal down, I think, on both occasions. But what went wrong for them today? Would you say they were on balance maybe the slightly better team in the 120?
It's hard to judge teams like Japan, I think, because Japan are so reliant on transitional moments. And I think that because of that, they will often look like they are, quote unquote, the better team, because they have those exciting breaks where it looks like they're going to generate a big chance. And I think on the basis of the chances they had, they probably were slightly better than Croatia on the day. I think Croatia were fairly poor. They're quite disappointing in a lot of respects. But yeah, if you're relying, the thing with Japan is that yes, they play transitional football. Yes, they rely on these moments. But in both of the games, both against Germany and Spain, they scored a couple of goals in a bit of a flurry and in moments where a lot of things have to go right in order for them to get the goals. And you're relying on those moments to sort of happen for you, and you don't have. The idea being that these other teams, both Spain and Germany, are going to dominate the possession. They're going to be able to have a greater volume of chances. Obviously, it didn't work out for them, but because Japan were able to get those goals and then hold on to the lead, it was fine. So it for me, it feels to me like an aesthetically weighted style of play, which makes people think, oh, they have these exciting breaks, etc. But in terms of effectiveness, like I'm not entirely sure it's the most effective way of playing in a tournament, but that's obviously how underdogs often do.
I guess
play.
They beat Spain and Germany.
Yes, they did. But again, if you look back to, I think that those moments, the goals that they got in both of those games, they were completely dominated in the first half. The Germany game in particular, Germany should have scored two or three goals in the first half, I think. And then in Spain, I think it was just a flurry of two quick goals very quickly. They pressed a bit higher, caused a little bit of problem for the Spanish in build-up, and then got the goals 1-2, bang, bang, and then were able to sit on the lead as well. So, yeah, obviously it's effective if you have that talent mismatch, but I think that, you know, you're relying on a lot for it to go right every game. And sometimes it just doesn't.
It felt like they could take off the shackles in those two games and just, you know, go cut loose and see what happened. And it felt like they didn't want to do that because knockout football, we can't risk that. They always seemed to be a cautiousness to what they did today, which kept them in the game for the whole period, but didn't really.
I think that's by design, though. I think that's because Croatia just didn't give them. There was no opportunity for them to do that whatsoever. And it's not like they were lucky against Spain and Germany. Like they just, the way they were going to score was through doing this, but they'll only get certain times. The only degree of luck there was in it in that is that they took the chances when they got them, because so many teams missed those big chances when they get like to hit them on the break. And I think you even seen the penalties maybe was like Croatia were calm and in control mostly of that, apart from the guy who stepped up and put it on the post.
He was too calm, right?
Yeah, he was too calm. Yeah. And then Japan maybe just didn't quite believe because they weren't getting opportunities, almost like it felt like they just sort of knew they weren't going to get past this. I don't know. And then in extra time, neither team looked like they were really had any way of doing it. Japan relied on too much energy to go and break in behind. Asano wasn't able to get any space in behind. He was on his own, isolated, because Croatia were dealing with him very well. If it wasn't so mostly quite dull, this game. I would quite like to watch it again to see what Croatia did to try and stop that, because I didn't really notice it at the time, how they stopped them being able to play in that transition.
It's worth saying that both Spain and Germany play really aggressive football in possession as well, so they do leave themselves exposed at the back. So that is going to favour Japan as well. So.
Should we just ban extra time?
Yeah.
That was like, what's the point of extra time?
I don't like it anymore. I used to like it when I was
Golden goal was good. Golden goal was
never
really
decides
good.
The game, does it? No. It's just like the precursor to penalties.
What do you feel about playing penalties before the game begins in case you need them?
I think that's a joke scenario.
Yeah.
It's funny.
I think they trialed it, didn't they?
I'm sure they did.
You know, take all the pressure
all
out
the
of
fun,
it.
All
and
the fun.
And then it kind of changes the complexion of the game, because what that means is if you've lost the penalties, you know that you have to go for it in the game.
And the other team just sits there because they know that, horrendous idea.
Mm.
No.
You should write to Arsene Wenger.
Sure. Have you got his address?
FIFA, wait, actually, it'll do you know there. What? FIFA headquarters in Zurich. It's on FIFA Straße. The street is called FIFA Street.
If you wrote a letter to Arsene Wenger at the FIFA headquarters, Switzerland, it would get there.
Definitely.
It would, wouldn't it?
All right, well, that doesn't need to be the barrier.
Post people, very, very... They know what they're doing, don't they? They know what they're doing. I watched a really interesting... what's that guy's name? Tom, the YouTuber.
Jones.
No, not Tom Jones. Tom Scott. Is his name Tom Scott, the YouTuber Tom Scott? Does anyone know about Tom Scott?
I'm too old.
Getting some nods from the production suite over there. Tom Scott, very good YouTuber.
The youngsters.
Yeah. Well, Tom Scott, he does sort of like YouTube videos. Go and look him up. I don't care. But he makes one where he goes to a mail center in the United States of America. I think it's one of only two left in the country, where all of the mail that's like unreadable to normal human eyes goes to be sorted. And it's incredible that the technology they use to try to decipher like the scrawl of people's mail. This last place, I like the last bastions of the defenders and rescuers of poorly written mail.
I went to the post office today to deliver some things. And
did you?
I
could have told me. I need to send Alex Stewart a book still.
I would have done that for you.
I still haven't done that.
I gave the guy my parcels, and he then had to like type the actual address into the machine.
Right.
And he typed it wrong every time because apparently my writing is bad. Who knew?
Well,
so
I'm
hoping they arrive.
I knew that. I couldn't read your handwriting either.
Really?
Yeah.
This is exciting stuff.
Hmm. You think so?
Yeah.
What about your handwriting?
It looks like a cartoon.
Yes. Yes. I expect you've got quite good handwriting, Michael Bailey.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I can barely read it sometimes.
Right.
It looks like my dad's, but I've never really understood why my handwriting looks like my dad's.
Mm.
So that must be because mine looks a bit like a cross of my parents. It's odd.
Is it possible that you are living a dream in which you have had a son that is Michael Bailey, but you are your father?
I mean, it's as possible as Brazil might win the World Cup, so
it's very probable. There are so many different dimensions and times. So
Croatia have been disappointing all the way through the tournament, haven't they, JJ? But I haven't really sort of. I feel like they're a team going to be difficult to play against. Nobody really wants to, but at the same time, they haven't impressed me.
But I think this
with the exception of continuing to win.
I think it's because they don't, like John was just saying, I think it's because they don't do anything exciting. So you don't remember any exciting bits.
Right.
Like you'll think Japan are the better team because they do the exciting stuff. And it's more fun when someone's running at great speed into space and they do something like that. But actually they kind of do control games. They just lack a bit of speed in the final third. So they can't really penetrate like the last line. So they end up having to hook it in. Like the header Perisic scored was really good today. Yeah. It was a great goal he scored there. They're fairly solid. Like Lovren, good ball playing centre-back. Gvardiol is a great centre-back. And the midfield three is one of the best midfield threes in the entire tournament. They can just control the game, keep it within the way they want to play it. Nice little triangles everywhere. They overload when they're meant to. They pull back and give space for others when they need to. Really smart. But it's not
Harry
as exciting.
Pitch in the chat says three penalty saves excited him. Fair enough. Three penalty saves is quite exciting, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Three midfielders actually play quite a Brazilian style of play.
Do they?
Interestingly, on European.
Really walking that dangerous line, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to explain that?
I just came so close to being cancelled. I just want to feel that adrenaline again. But
yeah. Just to let listeners know, I've closed your laptop, so you won't know, but you have in fact been cancelled. So.
Okay, cool.
Don't have any false confidence as you continue to speak.
Simply the three midfielders are sort of problem solving as they go along. Mm. So they, as JJ was saying, they're quite fluid, they're quite flexible, they're able to move around and move the ball and sort of, rather than having that structure there where they're going to play build up patterns per se, they just know that they're all three of them are very good on the ball and can sort of solve opposition pressing as and when it comes to them. So right. Kind of interesting in that respect.
That is interesting. Okay, fine. Well, what are we on? Japan.
Japan. I don't know. You closed my laptop.
Oh, Michael Bailey. Michael.
Oh, hello.
Michael Bailey. Perisic's headed goal.
Yeah.
Is it the best one at the tournament so far?
It's certainly the best one I can remember.
Very interesting.
Yeah. I literally had a block. I was like, what were the other headed goals?
Indeed.
Mitrovic's one did snap. You mentioned that, John. I was like, that was a great header.
Good.
I mean, Perisic's header.
Didn't Jude Bellingham score a headed goal in the first game?
Yeah, but
that was also a nice header.
Good header.
There was a lot of goals going over the goalkeeper in that game. So I'm, a bit like, yeah.
I feel like Giroud scored one.
Probably.
Let's all have a silent pause.
Let's think about it. Anyway. Yeah, but the Perisic's head is like 15 plus yards, isn't it? That's a long way
to
head.
I actually didn't see it. What did he do?
He headed it back across goal, which is something you should do. It sort of bent because you got, when you head it back across goal with power, you're able to sort of add some bend to it.
He added a bit of Beckham to it.
It started outside the post and a bit of swaz on it. That's perfect. And just nestled just inside the far corner. Headed it down as well. All of the rules.
There was a really nice angle from behind where you can see it starting outside the post and then curling in.
Beautiful.
Which is
wow.
Nice,
A curled header. Did the pundits love it, John?
I can't remember, to be honest. But I loved it. I thought it was nice. But I still think I prefer the Mitrovic one because everything in that goal was just perfect.
Yeah. Okay.
Mitchell Duke scored the first goal.
That was a good one.
Yes. That was a very good header.
Not got Seb here to...
That's true. I saw, not as a criticism of the podcast, I think we're doing a fine job, apart from potentially destroying the entire Thai brand and your career, doing a fine job. But I do miss Seb. Yeah, calming presence, isn't he?
He'd have talked about Mitchell Duke as well.
Yeah. So. If anyone here, he's the one I would have thought would have got in trouble for loving colonization, just because of his history as a privately educated man. And a kind of, he's watching at home, by the way. Hi, Seb. We miss you here. We miss you. Yeah. Speaking of Japan, we're not going to have the opportunity to talk about them again. Now they're out of the tournament, JJ. A couple of very, very exciting players. Will we see any of them more regularly? I mean, basically what I mean is, will I see them when I watch the Premier League? Because I'm not cultured enough to watch anything else.
I am unsure, but there's a couple who might have raised their profile. I mean, I think a lot of them play in Serie A and the Bundesliga.
Yeah, there's a few Bundesliga players here.
Because Duano being a name for himself. I didn't really know much about him before this tournament started, and he's come on, done really well. Asano looks like a decent counter-attack and a forward. I'm not sure what level he's quite at, because he is really good. Close control seems to be decent. Playing for a team who plays in the counter might be quite useful. And Ito as a right wing back / forward would be good in teams who play 3-4-3s. I don't know.
Endo's in the Bundesliga as well, has been for a while. Kamada also, Daichi Kamada, who I think will be maybe moving on this summer or even in January. So there's a few names that I think have done well. Ritsu Doan is playing for Freiburg, which is the team I watch, and they brought him in from, I think, one of the Dutch teams. I want to say PSV, but I'm not sure. But I think he's had a really good tournament insofar as he's really shone at this level. And I think that will make a big difference because he just looked comfortable in that sort of pressure.
Well,
game.
Is it right? Because people think, though, they've done well in the World Cup. So scouts have gone, oh, who's this guy? We'll sign him. Mm. It's not. Every single scout and analyst will know who all these players are inside and out and have data for all of them.
I thought that there was some commentary about Guardiola. In one of the recent games, the comment was something along the lines of, well, clubs are going to be lining up in January. Mm. And I thought, pretty sure they have been for some time.
3 years.
Yeah.
But it does give you a little bit of an extra level of data, right? Where you can see how players are going to function in different sorts of teams, how they're going to adapt to to different tactical systems and stuff. So for me, that's what's so interesting about Doan, is that he played even better than I thought he would do for this team, which is, I think, interesting because I watch him every week. So it's fascinating seeing them sort of, these players who come out of the shells in this kind of tournament.
Mm. Lovely. Okay. I believe you watched the game with James Richardson or Jimbo of Totally Football fame.
Yes.
JJ Ball. And you got bored and asked him what he would do if he was FIFA president.
Yeah, me and John were having fun, yeah.
Right, yeah. What did he say? I'm curious.
He said he would make it shorter. He was joking about all of these, by the way.
But he would make it shorter.
No, he makes football
shorter.
Not the ball.
Right. I wondered what he was going to make
the game shorter, he said. And he was, to be clear, he was laughing with us as well. He was part of the joke.
Right.
He would make them 60 minutes for a game.
But without a stop clock. So it was just like now, but shorter. So right. Just made the goals.
And again, Florentino Jimbo Perez.
And we did a big talk about the difference between movies and Netflix series and things like that now, and like how, you know, really the best things come out in serialized episodes of things now, and they can be different lengths. Well, a lot of them are. I mean, are there not many good movies? And then there's talk about Saves the Cat,
many
and
good
the movies.
This is what happens, isn't it? Uncultured people stop watching good things and then go, where's all the good films gone? You just got to look harder. Well, listen, this guy living on his couch, watching his Disney subscription. Nothing against Disney. It's very good, by the way. Enjoying it greatly.
Has the Masters in a film.
Amazing, isn't it? That I'm the one who goes to the cinema and you're the one who sits at home playing video. I do that as well.
You do that as well.
I do do that
until very late.
Anyway, I just don't want to hear naysayers about film.
My point was
film, the premier medium, as is the novel, Michael Bailey.
Exactly.
Yes, thank you. See, he knows how to pick up. Look at you go. Carry on.
Well, I was in time to save the cap. There's an aside. Mm.
What did James Richardson say, though?
Oh,
offsides.
Offsides, yeah. You do like hockey rules. Apparently, hockey's divided into like three thirds or something like that. And so if the ball is like...
Into three thirds.
Is that what I said? I don't know what I said.
Yeah.
So if
three
the ball...
Thirds. Incredible.
Just thirds would be fine.
Well, yes, but I'm adding words into it. It'll be edited later. So if the ball were to go into the last third, say someone punts it from the first third into the last third, and then someone really fast ran onto that, they could even start here, could they? I can't remember what the rule is. Yeah,
the ball, so basically you're not...
Also, can I just say JJ Ball breaking the hair rule for the audio listener.
Did I say here?
He said he would never do it. No. He said he was too much of a professional to do it, John McKenzie, but he did it. He said
I
here.
I didn't say that
And then
all.
He gave up explaining.
Well, that doesn't matter.
You said it with your eyes.
I think led to believe that in ice hockey, the ball has to go into the final third before any of the players, well, the puck, obviously.
Any of the players.
Yeah.
Do.
So you all have to be out of the final third. So the idea then is that in football, the ball would have to be played into the final third and then everyone could go in. But then if it was cleared out.
Everyone, including defenders.
I guess defenders are allowed. Yeah. But the ball gets cleared out. But then if you're in the final third, you then all have to pile back out again and leave it empty.
Can I say, and listen, this might not be a popular comment with ice hockey fans, but I don't get a game. You can't see the puck.
Yeah. It's hard. One of my friends lives in Canada and he said it took ages to watch it, but once he worked out where it was, then he really enjoys it.
You couldn't watch that game with a headache, could you? You know, you've got to sort of really kind of do to see the puck.
With a headache?
You know, when you have to focus and you've got a headache and your eyes hurt from focusing, you just want to, you know,
couldn't watch it with your hand in front of your face either.
You couldn't watch it with your hand in front of your face.
Which I think is a terrible, terrible sport.
I agree. Yeah.
You can watch it if you're underwater.
What's the second best sport, Michael Bailey?
In the world, behind football?
Just for you, your second favourite, I should say.
I do like, it's, my issue is, this is the answer you want. My issue is there are only like sports like fishing that I don't like. I genuinely like all sports. If there's a competition
like
on,
fishing.
I like to watch it. What, fishing? It's like,
you're
sport,
riding the line here, John. You be careful. Were you talking about murder? Like, come now.
It's not a sport. You have to throw the fish back in, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never been fishing.
Right.
It's all ignorance.
Sure.
But I love all...
You bring up fishing?
Because it's the sport
favorite?
I don't like.
Oh, right.
So like, I love basketball, Formula One, some rugby, snooker.
Yeah, rugby and snooker.
Yeah, together.
But if football suddenly...
Combine those two, that'd be a good game.
If football disappeared today... And you had to pick another sport.
I'd be out of a job. Lots of connotations.
I think I'd go for tennis.
Yeah, I love tennis.
Quite like tennis.
I did not think you'd say that.
Mm-hmm. It's quite metronomic tennis, isn't it?
It's boring.
It's easy. No, I find it very easy to watch.
Very boring to watch.
I like the sounds of tennis. You know, the sounds of tennis? Famous album by Frank Sinatra. Yeah. The sounds of tennis.
Well, Frank Sinatra playing tennis.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
Aussie rules football.
Who's the ball?
What's your if football was disappeared? Speaking of Frank Sinatra, yeah. What would you go to next? Sport.
Real life. So I won't do the jokes I normally do. Yeah. I always thought I liked basketball. Yeah.
It is good. I do like basketball.
Yeah, it's quite fun. Yeah.
Basketball is the sport I know the second most about.
I'm telling you, I want to do that game of golf combined where you're allowed to tackle the other person. So you both tee off at the same time. Yeah. And then you have to get the ball in the hole as quick as you can.
Foot golf, but you can't tackle. Foot golf, but with football.
Fight golf.
Fight golf, yeah. Fight golf.
MM golf. MMA golf.
MMG.
Yeah. A hole in one.
MMG.
Of your knuckles.
John McKenzie, I'm going to guess for you. I feel hunting. Based on hunting.
With my goblin horde. Oh dear.
Taking the hobbits to Isengard.
No, listen. If it disappeared, a nice game of cricket or...
No, fox hunting for
fox
me.
Fox hunting, yeah. Right, yeah. You're really leaning into the... Really?
I actually quite like curling. Curling is maybe my second favourite sport.
Curling.
I like snooker, but I really like curling.
You were watching curling in the office the other day when we were there.
You know how you make curling better?
World Cup games. Yeah. It was curling.
Yeah. You know how you make curling better? You tackle.
Druid man in the chat says John has gone goblin mode. I believe that
goblin mode
might
yeah.
be the case.
Well, actually find that phrase very offensive to all the goblin
to goblins,
people. The goblin community is not happy.
Okay, now what's happening? We've gone too far now. We pull ourselves and we, yeah, there it is. You feel that comfort?
So curling then. Yeah.
Curling, yeah. No, I'm done with curling now. Okay, fine. Well, in other news, Michael Bailey, Fernando Santos, the Portugal manager, very unimpressed with Ronaldo's reaction to substitution. Who'd have known Ronaldo might react poorly to being substituted?
Is he becoming like a comedy villain figure? I haven't seen this incident, but I've seen it sort of retold where he basically sort of said shut up. And it was that at the coach or
I don't know, I haven't seen it, it was another South Korean player.
Yeah.
So he's going to hurry him up and he says you've got no authority.
Right.
And then the Portuguese coach So he might not have the captaincy in the next game. I don't know. All is off the table.
There's a story evolving as well, right? This is a game that he doesn't even need to be, you'd feasibly just rest him up.
Well, listen, the stakes are very high for Cristiano Ronaldo because of course he's now unattached. And there is a story emerging today about where he might be attached in the coming days. We don't know yet. But very interesting stuff, isn't it?
But the whole scenario around that, there was it the first goal against which wasn't his against Uruguay. I mean,
the ball didn't touch his head. Yeah.
Just summed up so much of the current situation. It was just everything was about him claiming that goal constantly for the rest of the game. It's like, wow, just as a sort of a character opening, in my personal view and opinion, I was like, wow.
Here's a question, John McKenzie. You'll have played a lot of football. Perhaps I should ask a man with hair, though, because it was a heading issue. Presumably you know when you've headed the ball. Like in that situation with Ronaldo, he claims the goal. I can understand why that would happen from time to time.
I think you get close enough to the top of your head that you would feel like you touched it, but you haven't really. You would feel like it's on your hair. Maybe.
Which is why I said
the wind of the ball.
I used to have hair, you know.
Sure. But some time ago, you might not. You might not remember that far back. I don't know.
Yes, I've completely forgotten the experience of having hair.
Okay. Right. No, but I mean, I'm just wondering as someone who's never nearly headed a goal before.
I think you can sort of feel it on your hair a little bit, and it would feel like... Especially, maybe he just thinks he has. I mean, I think
I feel like whenever the ball hit my head, I'd go, that actually really hurts. And like, how did the footballers do that all the time?
It's just flicking across, and it's a little flick, so it's across him. So you'd feel like you have... And
he may have simply felt the wind that the ball carried with it.
No, there you go. That is something you would know about. That is something you would know about.
Adidas obviously said that he didn't. Sorry, that was funny. Adidas put out like a heartbeat of the ball, didn't they? It had flat line as Ronaldo touched it. But it's interesting that Adidas did that. And I guess Cristiano Ronaldo is a Nike advert.
Sure.
Nike advert. He is basically a walking Nike advert, which I thought was interesting. Just sort of Am I allowed to say that?
I don't know.
It's interesting,
yeah.
isn't it?
I think that's fine.
No, the ball was dead.
Yeah. There we go.
Carry on.
Well, I think we should probably play Points Are Bad now. We've come to that time. Now, Michael Bailey, you don't have a role
this is,
here.
I'm dead to this part.
I don't want you to feel disincentivized to join in the conversation.
But
you don't have a role.
Excellent.
Yeah? But what your role could be,
yes.
to really help me out there,
oh, yeah?
would be to just let me know what the games tomorrow are. Because what I've done is not written them in.
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, there are some wonderful games.
Well, if you look that up,
tomorrow.
I'll tell the gang in the background what's happened today.
I'm sorry.
Now, I'm last today. I racked up an impressive 6 points from two games because, of course, I picked up two predicting 1-1 Japan-Croatia. But I also thought that Brazil would only beat Korea Republic by 1-0, and they didn't. Yeah, so I picked up 4 points. That was a tragic one for me. In second to last place, it's John McKenzie. 4 points today. John, you picked up 3 on that Brazil game. Seb Stafford Blore, commiserations, you are second today with 3 points. And today's winner is JJ I'm Not Trying Bull. There he goes. And we'll come back to the grand totals, the new grand totals, a little bit later after Michael Bailey tells me what the games are tomorrow.
Yes, Joe, we have a fantastic lineup of World Cup games tomorrow. We have at 3 o'clock, that is British GMT time.
Don't talk about British time.
GMT time. Yes. I was trying to, you know, it wasn't the summertime. It was the other one. At 3 o'clock on that time, it is Morocco playing Spain. Spain won their group, whichever group that was. And Morocco are really good. I really like Morocco.
Yes,
that's exciting. So that's a game. And that's happening at one of the stadiums.
Yes.
Education City Stadium.
Oh.
We're all in for a football lesson there.
Oh.
And then at 7 o'clock, Greenwich of the medium time, we have Portugal playing Switzerland.
Oh, that's a tough one right there.
That's at the Lusail Iconic Stadium.
Okay, fine. Well, Michael Bailey, thank you very
Don't
much
build
for
my
that.
Part.
No, now, thanks. I will be going first as the loser for today, and I will say that Morocco, Spain, 2-1 Morocco.
I like it.
Hello! The game has begun, John McKenzie, and we're afoot. It is your turn to predict for Morocco, Spain, please.
2-1 Spain.
2-1 Spain. And okay. Seb Stafford Blore is to go next. And he did text me his predictions. I did wonder, Seb, because of course he has not missed an episode yet, whether he would remember to send me his predictions. But of course, good old trusty Seb doesn't forget a thing. Sometimes to an extent when it's kind of annoying. He says 1-2 Spain. He can't have that. Can't have that, can he? But he's also said 1-1. So we'll give him that now. JJ Bull, 2-1 Spain is taken, 2-1 Morocco is taken, 1-1 is taken. What are you thinking?
I wanted 2-1 Spain. I'm going to go for 2-0 to Spain.
You're going to go for 2-0 to Spain. You predict Morocco not to score.
I like Morocco, though.
Okay, indeed. Okay,
that's a good point.
Indeed.
Spain did not win the group, did they? Japan won the group.
That's correct.
Sorry about that.
That is correct. How could you? And nobody noticed except you. So you've redeemed yourself.
Well,
there we go.
I didn't see the chat.
Now, Portugal versus Switzerland. I'm going to go for 2-1 Switzerland. I really think Switzerland, tough team to play. Having said that, you know, maybe we discussed the possibility of Portugal playing without Ronaldo already, and I have heard that they're better team. I don't know, but I'm going to go with 2. I'm going to go with my gut. 2-1 Switzerland. John McKenzie, you're next up. What do you think?
1-1.
1-1. Okay. Seb Stafford Blore has asked for 1-1. Cannot have that. Has asked for 1-0 Portugal, which he can have. Now, JJ Bull the Bullard, what say you?
1-0 Portugal's going... okay, I'll go for 0-0.
You think 0-0?
Yeah.
That is a request. That is a request. Okay, fine. Now, we forgot to listen to the Points Are Bad song, so let's do that now, just before I tell you the grand totals. Michael Bailey, you've got some headphones on the floor there. Oh. You can pick those up.
Oh, I love this song.
Yeah. I don't have any headphones, do I?
John, you can share headphones. Yeah. No, the podcast isn't finished yet. What? Your podcast's not finished yet. Sit back down. There's one more little thing we've got to do after this. There you go. You can share.
Is it panned?
And now we can not listen critically. To the song from Jamie.
You're making me nervous with that, bending that.
Points again, and then they're really bad. Points again.
the points are bad song reimagined there by Ban Summers. Thank you, Ban Summers, for that. Now, listen, I'll tell you the grand totals so far as of day 16. We have a new loser. It's me. Oh. You were the loser before.
Oh.
Yeah. But I'm the loser now with 121 points. Just ahead of me on 120 is John McKenzie. And tied in first place on 115 points is Seb Stafford-Blaw and JJ Bull. Now, 6 points between first and last. That's very, very small. Yeah, you were second yesterday, JJ.
No, was I?
Seb's been first for a couple of days now. You guys have no idea. It's almost as though you don't care about the game. I mean, I know he says he's not trying, but I thought you were trying.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Mind games.
He's not trying. Okay, fine. One last thing to tell the podcast before we go today.
Six off you, I just realised.
Hmm?
Yeah, it's only 6 points.
Yeah, there's only 6 points in it. It's a real tight affair.
Clutch.
Yeah. Clutch, exactly. Exactly, Michael Buddy. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, listen, before we go today, we asked the live chat at the beginning of the episode, if you remember, what's the best World Cup song? And the answer is Waka Waka. 51% said the Shakira song. That was for South Africa, wasn't it?
Waka, hey.
I hear that all the time on the internet. Very good, isn't it?
It's really good, yeah.
Yeah, Football's Coming Home.
No.
Nearly in there. Nobody liked the Dario G song.
It's the best, well, because everyone's not born a time to...
People aren't
what?
Born.
That's the best one.
Yeah.
Come on, listen to that one.
There we go. And now as JJ does the air drums for the rest of the episode, emphasis on the air. Yeah, look at him go. There we go. We will say goodbye. Goodbye, JJ Bull.
See you later. Goodbye, Dan.
Goodbye, John McKenzie. Take care. Goodbye, Michael Bailey.
Bye.
And thanks, as usual, to Don and Jamie in the production suite over there. We'll be back tomorrow with more and with another special guest. But until then... Ta-ra. See you later. Bye-bye.